broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Here's the thing. Barbara Boxer, imagine this.
We want everybody to be civil. We want this issue.
When I looked at the screen had already...
But a movie that you're acting in, you don't have a lot of control.
Stop using dirty catheters.
Nappy is racial.
Yes, sir, I understand that.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this here show. Every night till 1 o'clock and 4 a.m., we take you through the looking glass and beyond. We go places other talk shows wish they could but can't. We go places where other talk shows wish they could but they can't. And a bunch of other things we could say that, you know, it would just sound like we're really kissing our own asses, and, you know, we'd rather you do that. Anyway, of course, I'm kidding about that. Welcome to our program. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Tonight, we have Margaret Gray on the line to be talking about a very frightening crime that was committed within the last 24 hours. And we will also have Mr. Dean Wheeler on from the Northern California Holistic Center. Arizona had a proof of citizenship requirement for voting. It's been overturned by an appeals court, a proof of citizenship before you vote. And there's some people that think proving you're a citizen before you vote is not such a crazy idea. 877-876-PHIL. Our website is philhendryshow.com. We'd like you to visit for live streaming, audio live streaming, video of the show right now. You can go over there, get a backstage pass, be a part of not only seeing the streaming video and hearing the audio podcasts, tomorrow's show, download them all. We just had another month made into downloads by our crew. We have archives that go back over 10 years. We have, in other words, the greatest radio website in the world. And PC World calls it one of the funniest of any website on the web. Our affiliate spotlight tonight in Chicago, WKRS, 1220 AM, and in Allentown, Pennsylvania, WSAN, 1470. Two stations on the Phil Hendry Radio Network, where we're very, very proud to have. And again, our website, philhendryshow.com. We're joined by Margaret Gray, who is at a screening tonight, but we are very grateful that she made some time to join us and talk with us about an issue that's as, about as scary a thing as I could imagine, Margaret. And again, thank you. I know you're in an area that it may be difficult to hear me. Can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you fine. So we're just wrapping up.
And what screening were you at?
He's a young director. His name is David Applewhite. He's very good. I think you're going to hear a lot about him. This is a very interesting film. It's a little biographical. But we had a good time watching it.
All right. Margaret, the story that we're talking about here, a four-year-old boy accidentally shot his mother with a semi-automatic shotgun.
Yes.
The father gave the boy ammo because he was curious about firearms. A four-year-old boy playing with a semi-automatic shotgun accidentally shot and wounded his mother. Investigators say the boy was given a shotgun cartridge by the father. This is in Bremerton, Washington. He was playing with it. He loaded it into the shotgun while his mother was on the phone with her back to him. Scott Wilson, a spokesman for the Kitsap County Sheriff, said the wounds were caused by birdshot, which is not a very big piece of shot, but nonetheless, that sticks in the skin.
And you have to go to the emergency room, Phil. And let me tell you, at a close range, that will blind a human being. It can. It will open up a hole in a human being. It is not anything that anybody is going to take very lightly to hospital. And the father giving that cartridge to that boy is so suspect. And it is such a suspicious thing that I refuse to believe the police are not looking into that.
I would agree. I would agree.
You know, giving that cartridge to that child, and then he would be able to say, oh, I didn't know, it was an accident and so forth.
All right, well, let me read on here just a couple of things. It was birdshot. The father gave the boy the cartridge because he was interested in guns. On Monday afternoon, the boy found an unloaded semi-automatic 12-gauge shotgun under a blanket on the bed. The bolt was pulled back and locked open. All the kid did, according to police, was drop the shell in the chamber, touch the bolt release, and pull the trigger. He'd probably seen his dad do it 100 times. Wilson said the shotgun was still on the bed when it went off. The boy did not lift it up. The woman was treated and released from the hospital. There have been no arrests, though.
That is surprising to me.
However, prosecutors could decide to file charges once the investigation is complete. None of the family members have been identified publicly. I know that you, Margaret, have written an interesting book that is I think has either come out or is due to be released
in November. Phil, Walk Away from Fear is it's a book really about being a mother of a son. And being the mother of a son is really kind of, it's a wonderful experience. It's, boys are very special. They're very, they're wonderful human beings. They're interesting. Boys are far more emotional than girls. Boys open their hearts to you much more readily than girls. And I don't know whether that's because there might be a little bit of a competition with girls, between girls and mothers. I don't know. And I'm going to move out of this room, Phil, if you don't mind, because... I have to close the door here.
It was getting a little noisy.
Yeah, I wasn't able to hear. Boys, I think, are wonderful. I am the mother of a 13-year-old boy, Jason J. Delmonico. He is an artist. He's a child actor. He's a student, but he's also just a child. And we do a lot together as mother and son. His father is... Frank is a good deal older than me, as you know. Frank is 20 years older than me. So his father's in his 70s. And so Frank is not as active, perhaps, as a lot of fathers can be. He is involved in Jason's life. But when it comes time to just going out and doing things together, I love to go out with my son. I took him to a football game a couple of weeks ago. We went to see the UCLA game.
Oh, over the Rose Bowl, uh-huh.
And then I took him to dinner in Pasadena, and we had a good time. And those are the times that I spend with my son. But you are never too far away if you are a mother who is aware. And if you are a mother who is aware of the realities of having a son, you're never that far away from being aware of the fact that that little boy, as much as you love him, and I worship the ground that my son walks on, I give my life for him. But I am not too far away from the realization that that child, he is a male, and they can turn very, very quickly into a very dangerous individual because they are male, because they have the genetic predisposition as well as the hormonal predisposition to violence. So you're never too far away from that little boy who you love very much turning on you. And
well, in your book... and in reading it, I was disturbed because there for women to love their sons and yet fear them, you know.
No, there is no. You never fear your son. You are prepared. I don't go anywhere without some kind of protection when I'm with him. It sounds strange. It sounds like something that no mother would consider doing.
Well, you say in your book that you don't go anywhere when you're with your son Jason. You don't go anywhere.
Jason J.
You don't go anywhere without. Mace or pepper spray?
Well, that sounds a little dramatic. I always carry some form of protection with me.
Even if it's just, if you're at home alone with your son?
If I'm home alone with my son, I always want to have something handy.
And we're not talking about the house getting broken into.
No, Phil, we're not talking about the house getting broken into, but I want to be clear about something. I love my son very much. I don't think my son is a bad child. But he's a boy. And because he's a boy, he is male. And since he is male, he will someday be a man. Now, all three of those create a holistic dynamic that means, among many things, the fact that he is predisposed to very aggressive and terribly frightening violence. Rape, murder, and so forth. So there are three things in my book.
Rape, all right. I just want to stop you there because I think that's a very...
there are three things in my book. I wish you wouldn't stop me now.
Well, let me give our phone number, and then I want you to continue. I'm not going to a break. We're talking with Margaret Gray. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. A 4-year-old boy accidentally shot his mother with a semi-automatic shotgun. The woman is okay. It was birdshot. But this was a 4-year-old boy whose father had given him a cartridge to drop into the shotgun, which the child did do. He never lifted this gun, Margaret, off the bed. So apparently this baby put this cartridge in the gun. It's a four-year-old child. Don't you think the father is more to blame?
Well, I think the father is an absolute idiot. I mean,
don't you think he's to blame for the injury to the mother?
There is no question the father is an unbelievable, unconscionable idiot. But he's an idiot for two things. He's an idiot for giving a child the cartridge to a shotgun. He's also an idiot for giving the cartridge to a shotgun to a little boy. He knows, like any father should know, like any mother does know, that this is a small boy, prone to violence even at a very early age. Now, there are three very, very easy, basic rules that I lay down at the beginning of my book. Number one, when you are with your son, or you're with more than one son, and some women have three or four or five sons, and that multiplies the risk.
Maria has three sons. Are you saying that she should have had mace?
Let me just go through the three. Always protect yourself when you're at home with your sons, if you're out driving. You love them, you're having a good time with them, but never keep your hand too far away from mace, pepper spray, something like that. Number two, if your son or sons, and God forgive me for saying this, but God help you if more than one of your sons goes off. If your boy goes animal, I tell you in my book how to talk him down from this animal-style male rage that they can many times find themselves in. Number three, this is very important, Phil. Remember proper dress. He is your son, but he is, as I said, not too far away from this genetic predisposition to violent rape. Never dress provocatively in front of your son.
Okay, that is going to scare a lot of people when you say that.
No, I understand that, but let me...
Because, first of all, rape is a violent act.
It is absolutely a violent act, but I am trying to cut down the odds.
And you're saying, and I want to be clear, if you dress provocatively in front of a son, you are running the risk of provoking him to rape.
You are running the risk, yes, if the time is right, if the place, if the mood is right, if the setting is just right, and he feels he has nothing to lose.
And what do you mean by nothing to lose? We're talking about your son now. We're talking about a boy, okay?
I understand that, Phil.
You're making it out like this child is thinking in an extremely calculating way.
Phil, I just say in my book, I think it is very sound advice. I don't think any mother should dress provocatively in front of a daughter or a son. So wear baggy jeans, wear the frumpy sweaters. Dress like a tomboy. Dress, I use the word lesbian. You don't necessarily have to subscribe to that word, but dress in a very non-sexual way.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, as we talk here to Margaret Gray, who is the editor of A Little Bird Told Me, nationally syndicated column. Her book is called Walk Away from Fear, the story of a four-year-old boy accidentally shooting his mother with a shotgun. Sort of goes to the essence of Ms. Gray's book, which is that sons, your son, my sons, anybody's son, is a male, and therefore is not too far from a genetic predisposition to violence. And mothers, even with their sons, should carry mace or pepper spray. 877-876-PHIL. We're going to be back here and talk more. Very interesting topic. I don't know how anybody is to apply this. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
What does that mean?
I just don't know.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Back with Margaret Gray, the author of Walk Away from Fear. It is a book that she has written concerning the relationship of women with their sons. Story today, a four-year-old boy accidentally shoots his mother with a semi-automatic shotgun. As a four-year-old child, should never have had the gun. The father gave this child the gun with a cartridge. But you say it is a instinct, it is a conscious instinct, it is not too far from the surface, the instinct of every male, even a four-year-old, to do violence to their mother.
Yes, Phil, because it's very, very, it's part of the Oedipal reflex that that Freud talks about, that a boy wants to physically possess his mother, either through death or through the act of sex. So as a mother, I love my boy, but I keep mace, I keep pepper spray. I have to know how to talk him out of any kind of animal rage that he might go into, the same way I would talk any potential rapist or bugger out of the act.
You're talking to your own son.
But you have to remember, Phil, you don't want the child... First of all, you don't want to call the police. You don't want the police involved. You don't want that. There is embarrassment. There is what can happen to the boy.
So what do you say to a son that is bent on, in your opinion, raping you?
Phil, you're saying this as if I'm some sort of a sick freak that made this up.
I've never heard of this, Margaret, so you have to go very slow with some of us. That's all I'm saying.
Well, look, you talk to that child the way you talk to anyone that is going to do you harm. You say to him, I'll give you what you want, but not here, not out here in the open, not here in a parking lot, or wherever. You say to him, if you have to, your sister is much more your age. Offer him your sister. Offer him your daughter. You don't mean it.
Oh, God.
You don't mean it. You're trying to talk him down from the rage.
And all right, let's say you talk him down from the rage, and do you go home with this child? And
well, if you've talked him down from the rage, there is every indication that this will be a situation that you'll be able to handle when you get home. Again, you are armed, and you have to be aware.
877-876-PHIL. Here is Michelle in Boston listening on WTKK. Go ahead, please.
Oh, my God. I can't believe this woman ever got married. To begin with, I have an 18-year-old son. I've never been afraid of him.
Not only am I married, but I'm a writer, and I've studied the problem.
You have inflicted this into your son.
Excuse me, but a boy, age four, shot his mother with a shotgun.
Boys love their mother.
Is that why this boy shot his mother? Is that why he shot his mother? Because he loves her?
He didn't mean to shoot his mother.
Oh, he didn't mean to shoot her.
You
ought to get out and see her. You ought to get out. I think you should see the world a little more.
Inflicting this into your son's being is an awful thing. You should rethink being a mother.
People like you that do more talking than listening. People like you that do more talking than listening. Is that right?
No.
You know my son? Because I know your son. And he doesn't love you at all because you never shut up. And your mouth, one of these days, is going to drive him over the edge.
Okay, we don't need that.
Well, I think what I'm saying is true. No, I think what I'm saying is true.
You're insane.
Her endless mouth is going to drive that boy to violence.
No, it's yours that is going to get your son
into a lot of problems
and turn him into a rapist.
Well, is that it? And your mouth never shutting up. What's that going to do to your son? What is that going to do to your son?
Margaret, let's talk here. Obviously, this lady is rejecting what you're saying.
Well, fine, but I'm making a very good point here. That her haranguing, and her emasculation of her own son
is predisposed to anything unless it's instilled in him, and that is exactly what you're doing.
Listen, you talk much? You know, first of all.
All right, let's be grown ups here. Now, I know that one thing that Margaret is saying is true, that there is a genetic predisposition in men and women for certain traits. Men are aggressive. We know that boys react to each other. Boys show affection by wrestling.
Exactly.
All right, by wrestling and showing sort of aggressive behavior toward each other. It's sort of a male thing. But what you're saying is that this male need to have this kind of aggressive physical action turns into rape and violence. If you don't, if you look at him cross-eyed?
Well, for instance, this woman, with her haranguing of her son, the emasculating nature of her of her tone, of this, the tone of this woman. She's going to push her boy to the point where if they find Oliver, it'll be a miracle.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And listen to her laugh. God, I hate it. I hate your show.
We'll be back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Margaret Gray with us. We're talking about the propensity in your book, Walk Away from Fear, the propensity of sons to commit violence against their mothers. That it's a common fear that women have. Now, what were you saying? The last caller really got your goat.
Well, Phil, you know, it is very common for women, especially that woman, because I noticed her voice was very aggressive. She had a very aggressive personality. She was a very haranguing kind of person. I don't doubt for a moment that she addresses her own son or sons in that tone of voice. And I can tell you with great authority that if she does, she's sitting on a keg of gunpowder. Edward Kemper was a famous serial killer, Phil, who murdered his own mother. And I'll try not to be graphic, but let me put it to you this way. He threw something into the garbage disposal, and it jammed the garbage disposal. Kemper's famous quote was, "She never shut up in life, and now she jams up the garbage disposal." So you can see, and that's a very good example of Charles Whitman, another man that killed his mother. Daniel Patrick recently, the murderer of his mother, because she wouldn't let him play video games, and on we go. I've written a book that will try to, at least will keep some women alive, maybe not that woman from Boston.
All right, well, we don't know anything about that woman from Boston. You wanted to comment on her call, and that's as far as I'm comfortable going. I don't want to make any commentary about her family, her son.
Well, I'm making it. I can tell you she was a haranguing, caterwauling. I could just tell they with the mouth.
All right, well, we'll let that speak for itself. We're talking with Margaret Gray here on the propensity of violence in young men. Possibly against their mothers. You've also said mothers should carry mace and pepper spray around their own sons. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Judy. Go ahead, Judy. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Margaret Gray.
Thank you, Phil. Ms. Mm-hmm. Gray, I have three sons. They're 42, 40, and they're 35.
Mm-hmm.
I spent my life raising them, and I lived with them. I walked around in underwear in front of them, and they walked around in underwear in front of me. Nobody ever looked at anyone sexually.
Oh my God.
I think that you have a fantasy that your son is going to look at you sexually. I think that's something you might want.
You walked around in underwear in real life. Now, who has the fantasy? I dare
you have a fantasy.
You.
This is a home. When you're walking around naked in your underwear in front of your boy. Why not?
For the very reasons that I gave you. If you are going to provoke a son who has a genetic predisposition to animal behavior, you think it's normal, in other words, to walk around topless.
Can I talk for a moment? I want to be clear.
You walked around topless or just in panties or what did you do?
Oh, in underwear. My children never displayed animal behavior. My children never tried to hurt me. My children were taught from a very early age. They never touched their mother, and they never did. I have three terrific grown men who are all married and daddies. And I don't understand where you're coming from.
I am telling you that it is just below the surface. And to walk around, I will tell you, if you feel comfortable Well, of course I'm stuck with the underwear. You walking, you parading yourself in front of your son. What is that about?
What is that about? I lived in a house.
Women, a lot of women. Yeah. I mean, Margaret, I don't know, but there are a lot of women, they've got kids and they are going to jobs and they are getting breakfasts made and they're walking around nude, you know, especially if the kids need them, they're coming out of the bathroom, you know.
Really? And the boy is 17. That's really,
well, no, I didn't say 17, but younger children.
Well, I find that, call me crazy, I find that to be very, very wrong.
Look, now,
this woman dodged a bullet.
You're putting words.
Good for you.
Margaret, you're putting words in my mouth.
Well, what am I saying that isn't true?
You're making a thing out of this. But what happened was, as the years went by and the kids got older, if I was in underwear, I never ran into the bathroom and shut the door. We lived in a home. This was our home.
Oh, my God. So, in other words, the older you got, the more naked you got. See, that goes against the grain.
No.
The older you got, the more the clothing came off.
No.
Well, that's what you said.
The older I got, the more the clothing went on. But if I was in underwear, I never hid from them. I was their mother. They never looked at
me as a sexual being. I don't want to beat it to death, but let me just say this. If you're walking around in underwear, how do you know your sons aren't, quote, beating it to death? And I'm not going to go any further with that. And
you have
a tremendous fear, okay? And I think you also have a wish that your son will...
That's vicious.
Is either going to harm you or your son is going to want you sexually. And I think
that if anybody has
a problem, it's you.
I am an attractive woman, all right? So a man wanting me is not unusual. Why wouldn't my own son... And if you're
come on! I mean, there is such a thing as there's some kind of restraint, civilized restraint that human beings don't see. Everybody is a sexual conquest. You know, some people are just mom.
Some people are mom, Phil, and some people are mom. And if it's a boy who has millions of years of genetic predisposition to killing animals with his bare hands, what he wouldn't want to do to his own mother?
All right. Yes, Judy, go ahead. One final thought.
Your son is your child. Okay?
Yes.
I take it you gave birth to him.
He's also a walking time bomb.
He's not a walking time bomb. I think you need to take a look at yourself. Thank you. I'm finished. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Yeah, please, thank you. Put some clothes on.
Well, that was not necessary.
Well, she's talking about walking around. And I did hear her say, as the years went on, I quit running to the bathroom and slamming the door. So in other words, her high school senior son, her adult or her teenage sons, come home, and mom is sitting on the couch in a brassiere and panties and decides, oh, well, they're 18, so I'll just sit here with my underwear pulled up, what, to a wedgie?
I don't think anything that woman said even went near anything like the way you're describing it.
Well, how do I know? She's sitting there on the couch and decides, oh, there are the boys, and she reaches back and yanks it up. For laughs, maybe.
877-876-PHIL, talking to Margaret Gray here about the possibility that your son, if you're a woman, has violent intent toward you, including rape. Leon in Portland, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi, Phil. Well, I hate to burst Margaret's bubble. I'm 64 years old. I've been taking care of my 87-year-old mother for going on three years now.
Well, that's a recipe for disaster.
Let me ask you a question. It really is.
You've been with your mother for how long? How long have you been with your mother?
Hey, lady, shut up a minute.
Did you say, well, no, excuse me? No one
I
tells
said,
me to
shut
up
a minute. Let me not.
No one tells me to shut up.
I just
Now I'm going to talk even more. How long have you been with your mother?
All right, I'm going to exercise some control. Just let the man talk.
And I can't ask a question.
No, just let him talk. Go ahead, sir.
I visit my mother. I live with my wife and my son. I'm the youngest of three brothers. None of us ever raised a finger to our mother. My son would never raise a finger to my wife because we respect one another. It's the law of God that overrules your so-called...
Or you're afraid of being arrested. Or you're afraid of being arrested.
Right. I'm not sure.
Are you not afraid of being... And let me ask you a question. Are you not afraid of being arrested? Of course you are.
If I can...
Well, maybe he's not afraid... He's afraid of being arrested, but he's not afraid of being arrested for attacking his mother.
But he doesn't know because it is a genetic predisposition. You know, sir, I'm having a hard time understanding you because this is how you sound. Your words are coming out in a spastic, manner.
You're crazy and
understand.
Jay Bird, lady.
I don't understand. Jay Birds are not crazy.
You're
worried about me now, so you're very concerned for me.
I'm
crazy.
Concerned about you. You're crazy as a
you're
jaybird.
You're very concerned.
You're
are you really?
A jaybird? Excuse me. Can.
How is a jaybird crazy? I don't know about... What, that's
an
not a very good comparison, is it?
It's a question that every sentient human being understands, madam.
Your son, if you have a son, should
run away from
crazy.
You as far and as fast as he can because you're crazy as Mother Bates.
Well, it might be.
And you're raising a Norman Bates by your delusion.
Well, you can insult me all you want, but you're the older son that still visits his mother like a good little boy, don't you? You do, don't you?
What's wrong with taking care of your
wife? How old
are you? Don't you want to take care of you when you're in
You go over and you visit your mother and do what? What do you do to her?
What do you do to that woman? I take her to the doctor.
You don't want to say, do you? You had to think about that? You paused for a long time. And the reason why you paused, is because you didn't want to blurt out, I go over there with a desire to bash her brains in.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, Margaret.
Well, why didn't the man answer? Why didn't he answer right away?
Well, you asked him, what do you do to your mother? I mean, first of all, what do you do for your mother would have been a more appropriate question.
No, what do you do to your mother?
All right, so you ask him that, and the man is taken aback by that. Okay.
Taken aback, or is he thinking, what does she know?
Mrs. Bates,
Little Lord Fauntleroy, you have your opinion. And when you go over to see your mommy, make sure she dresses you in your Buster Browns.
Okay.
You're the man in his 40s that's going up to the house on the hill. Not
my
son. I've
got all the aspersions you want, lady, but you're still a nut job, and everybody knows it.
Your mother is in danger. You going over there, locking the door, drawing the blinds, and saying, Mom, I'm here, and she wets the bed.
All right. Thank you very much, sir, for your call. 877-876-PHIL. What is wrong with a man taking care of his mother? You turn it into the possibility of an assault. A man, three men who are raised by a woman. She walked around in her underwear. Women do that. But for you, every boy has this fantasy that is not far from the surface of wanting to attack and brutalize, including rape, his own mother.
You know, Phil, I am getting all kinds of heat here tonight. But there was a man not too long ago by the name of Sigmund Freud who said it was the secret desire of every man to have sex with his mother. And that man is in the Hall of Fame. That man is featured in encyclopedias around the world and considered the father of modern psychoanalysis. And yet I, Margaret Gray, I speak these truths, and I'm a nut job. I'm Mrs. Bates. While that man gets to drive to his mother's house tonight, laughing about the conversation he had with me, goes into the house, draws the blinds, locks the door, while his mother shakes with fear.
You'd have no idea.
So, well, then I do know who Sigmund Freud is.
All right. Well, you're right about Freud, but that is an interpretation you're putting on it that may not exist at all in the annals or in the minds of those who know his work. Here is Elizabeth in Tennessee, Chattanooga, listening on WPLZ. Elizabeth, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
God almighty.
Elizabeth? All right. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to... I think we've got George on the line, and George is in Nashville. Go ahead, George. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Now, I was going to try to be nice, but I am sorry. I think this lady is an idiot. I think she's raising a monster. She's teaching him to be a monster. I mean,
what are you talking about?
You are crazy.
Have you ever heard of, a loon or a jaybird, something like that? Have you ever heard of Sigmund Freud? Do you know who he is?
If you walk around with mace and weapons around your son scared of him, you're going to teach him that he is a monster, and that's what you're doing with him. You are crazy. These people.
That's like saying that a police
man
officer
sticks to your arm, taking care of his mom, and you think that he's going there to beat her up. You are crazy.
I think the fantasy is not.
I can't believe anybody would publish a book that you write. You are an idiot.
Let me ask you something. How do you know that man doesn't secretly fantasize?
Because he does not. There is a bond between a man and his mom, and they take care of their mom. There is a love. Yes, there is.
What about Daniel Petrick?
I think the lady before was right.
What about Daniel Petrick?
Daniel Petrick was a disturbed man. Now, and you want to say that every man is disturbed to that level, whether he's a psychopath or psychotic, because Daniel Petrick or Kip Kinkle or Charles Whitman or Edward Kemper or any of these guys killed their mothers. This is aberrant behavior, and we're talking about the normal young male.
The normal young male, Phil, is genetically connected to millions of years of DNA that goes back to a time when males out of the tribe leapt on the back of an animal and tore its throat out with their teeth. But don't tell me that the man that's going to visit his mother tonight in Portland, that woman shakes with fear.
He's going to take care of his mom because he respects his mom and he loves his mom because
really?
She took care of him all his life. And I think somebody needs to call DHS on you and they take your son away from you because you're raising a monster
get me away from him. And I can tell you something else. If you've never heard of a boy killing his mother because
There's 6 billion people in the world.
I know what it was. I forgot. Ed Gein. You know who he is?
Ed Gein didn't kill his mother.
You don't know who Ed Gein is? Of course you don't know who Ed Gein is. He gutted his mother like a deer.
No, he did not. His mother died of natural causes. Ed Gein went insane after she died.
Yes, and then killed other women that looked like her, put on their skin, and wore it like a dress.
Oh!
You people, of course he has to go, because he doesn't want to hear the truth.
Ed Gein was psychotic. Ed Gein was psychotic. He was mentally. He was disturbed beyond all reason.
I'm telling you,
All right, 877-876 Phil. I appreciate your call, sir. We'll be back here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show. And if you're playing with me, Ms. Gray, you know.
What do you mean playing with you?
Well, you're going messing around with the phone.
So I can't have a couple of laughs.
877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with Margaret Gray here on The Phil Hendry Show. Boys and their desire to kill their mothers. God.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Why don't you get a sense of humor?
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
No, I don't think you do.
All right. We're back on the Phil Hendry Show. You wanted to make a statement, Ms. Dooley? I mean, Ms. Gray, I apologize.
Well, I don't know who Ms. Dooley is.
I apologize, Ms. Gray.
I have been on your program many times, Phil, and I have been treated very shabbily a great many times. But I have never, ever been on a radio program like yours and been treated with such disrespect as I have been tonight. Frank and I, we're going to put out I don't know if you call it a load. A download of some Broadway hits that I wanted to debut on your program this evening. But I'm really having second thoughts about it.
Ms. Gray, your subject matter was so disturbing to people that they felt the need to question your sanity.
Well, they may have felt the need to question my sanity, and maybe they should feel the need to get a penicillin shot, to take a bath. They may feel
Can't talk?
Yes, I can talk. You know what? I think I will sing one song. Here's a song that reminds me of your show, Phil, and what it's like being on your show. Death walks behind... Get it?
Okay, that's it, huh?
Yeah.
She was going to sing what?
She was going to sing Death Walks Behind You, Atomic Rooster.
Death Walks Behind You, Atomic Rooster. I apologize, Ms. Gray, if you felt badly handled.
She's back.
She's back. Okay. You know, this hanging up and getting back on the line and hanging up and getting back on the line is not going to make me very happy.
It's not going to make you happy. Here's the song I was thinking of. It's from Camel Toe.
And Camel Toe?
The musical about King Arthur, you idiot.
It ain't called Camel Toe. It's called Camelot.
You're a lion. Is it called Camel Toe or Camelot?
I think it's called Camelot.
You're both lying, and you're both men. You're both liars, and you're both men. Enough said.
Phil Hendry.
Death walks behind you.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Woody Allen had a great line in Crimes and Misdemeanors.
We want everybody to be civil. We want this issue.
Especially in a community with a lot of elderly citizens.
I've seen people who will have half of it and they're gone.
I had a wet dream last night.
Good day.
Bastards from a basket!
World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And on this show, truth is our bitch. No wonder it pisses so many people off. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. And our website, philhendryshow.com, philhendryshow.com. Go on over, get a backstage pass, and become a part of the only radio show website that's it is worth being a member of, because we actually have an archive of radio material that is episodic. You can listen to it over and over again. Our radio show is unique among all in radio today. It plays as a rerun. It plays the way a television show plays, because it's an episodic kind of radio show. So we invite you to be a part of that. At philhendryshow.com, get a backstage pass and get with it, man. Now, I know you spend your $6.95 a month on porn, and that's just wonderful. I'm sure that's very healthy, and I'm sure you feel just so marvelous and clean after you do that. But I would suggest that it's a far better investment, far better for yourself as well as your family, that you not drive yourself mad on Vanessa Del Rio's site and come over to ours. PhilHendryShow.com. It's PhilHendryShow.com. All right. Court overturns Arizona's proof of citizenship requirement. This is a big-time story. This broke today in Arizona. Dean Wheeler is going to join us from the Northern California Holistic Center. A federal appeals court today threw out an Arizona state mandate. Now, listen to this, folks. An Arizona state mandate, a federal appeals court threw this out. For people to provide proof of citizenship before being allowed to register to vote. So the federal appeals court threw out this Arizona state law that would mandate people proving they are citizens before being allowed to vote, to register to vote, that is. In a divided decision, the majority of the three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals concluded the requirement approved by Arizona voters in 2004 runs afoul of the Federal National Voter Registration Act. And one of the people that was looking to overturn this requirement, Mr. Wheeler, this is a happy day for yourself as a part of a progressive coalition that was looking to get rid of this, correct?
Well, that's very true, Phil, and it is doubly true from the standpoint that we get it from as far afield a place as California. So we have reason to celebrate. I know that there's going to be a battle with the Tea Party people over this, because
the Tea Party people seem to think that those who vote now in this country are individuals that have done well by their right to vote. Well, you know, and I know, that the American people have long disrespected their right to vote, have used it destructively or not used it at all, and we need every human being within the boundaries and the borders of America to cast a vote.
Regardless of whether they're illegal or not.
Let's talk about that illegal, what you call illegal, and what we encourage the court to see as an individual expressing an inalienable right. Now, the inalienable right, as it was articulated in the Constitution, as well as in our Declaration of Independence, is a right that is inherent. It is a right we are born with. So the inalienable right to vote as a free man for the issue or the individual that you care for is a part of every person, not just Americans. And that's why we fight for the rights of people who have been interned at Guantanamo, and why we fight for the rights of people who have been arrested and put on trial at the Guantanamo Naval Air Base, and why we do now celebrate this ruling.
All right, I don't mean to interrupt you, Dean, but what you're telling me is that that America needs everyone to vote regardless of their legal status in this country.
We have reached a point, and we've always really, it's always been legal for even a so-called undocumented or illegal person to vote, because our country recognizes the inalienable rights of people. That's not a right bestowed by a government. It's a right. It's a root right. It is root to the right that we have to be free. And that's not something bestowed by the government. That's bestowed by God. When you take the same right and apply it to voting, you have the same result. And that's what the court saw today.
All right. Well, here is the state of Arizona. Arizona has tried to make it so registered legal Americans can vote and that illegals do not vote. Now, the federal government says their National Voter Registration Act trumps that. You're saying that constitutionally, illegal immigrants should be allowed to vote, even though we have not really allowed them to vote in the past.
Well, first of all, the state of this country and the way the American voter and the American citizen has taken care of this country and the involvement of the American people in the process of governing this country has been so deficient that...
Well, I want to ask you something. Who makes that judgment? The American people go to the polls, and they vote for who they think is right. And I must say they voted for your guy, Barack Obama, last time out.
That was the wrong vote, and we can all see that.
Would you have rather voted for...
I would have rather have voted for Ralph Nader, and I made a mistake, and a lot of people did. But my vote is one vote. The American people is who I'm talking about. I know what I did wrong. Did the American people know what they did wrong? What you have are millions of people that put a man into the White House, and I think Barack Obama is a great... I think he's a terrific man. I think he's a good president. But he could not govern because he had the Republicans who were set almost as if they took a blood oath. It doesn't matter how good Barack Obama is as a president. We want him to fail, and we'll do whatever we can to make him fail. Now, there's an old principle in American law that when it comes to guiding this country through a national election, all voices in this country are equal. Illegal immigrants are no less of a voice than you or me. It's called equal rights, and it's something that we need to respect and must uphold constitutionally. So we do applaud
the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals today.
Dean Wheeler joins us here as we talk about the majority of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has overruled Arizona. Arizona believes that you should be a citizen in order to vote, and they need, and not just that, but they believe that you should provide proof of citizenship before you can vote. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Mr. Wheeler, you believe in the voting rights of illegal immigrants, something that you believe is constitutional. In this day and age of the anti-immigrant sentiment in this country, which is, it comes in waves, there's no question, is that really a political point of view you're going to be able to sell?
Well, it doesn't matter whether you can sell it or not. It's what the Constitution calls for. The beauty of our Constitution is that it's the Constitution, and people may think a lot of things, but if it isn't constitutional, then it doesn't matter. And so if people don't like the idea of immigrants coming to the country, that's too bad, because they have a right to vote the same way everyone...
Even illegal immigrants.
Yeah, even illegal immigrants, because the long-standing tradition, we desperately need the objective voice to move us forward. Who is more objective than the non-citizen, the immigrant? And the long-standing tradition in our country is that we need every voice to count, even the illegal immigrant.
And you believe it's more needed today than ever before because the country is, the people, the voters have made such a mess of things. And I think it's interesting that somebody who supported Barack Obama, you now are opposed to him. You think the voters have made a mistake.
Well, they made the mistake in this regard. They made the mistake because they voted for Barack Obama, but they didn't get enough Republicans voted out so that there would be more Democrats, so that then they would have the voice that they need to get Obama's laws passed, and they didn't do that. Well, who are we, though, Phil, to deny a free person his or her right to vote? They live here. They work here. They deserve a say in the direction of this country. They're some of the only people who can be trusted to offer an objective voice to the American people, because the country is polarized. We've got progressives and tea parties, and the country has been taken over by insane, crazy people who are mad as a tea hatter, and we need the immigrant, even if the illegal immigrant is who we have to fall back on.
Dean Wheeler has joined us. Our number 877-876-PHIL. Mr. Wheeler is talking about the need for all people to vote, including illegal immigrants. And the state of Arizona, which had tried to make proof of citizenship a requirement to vote, they had that law struck down by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. So in Arizona, you do not have to prove citizenship to vote. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with Dean Wheeler talking about voting and who gets to vote and who doesn't on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's The Phil Hendry Show.
Can I get a Pepsi or something?
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL is our number. With us is Dean Wheeler, the Northern California Holistic Center, and also with the Progressive Coalition there. And we're talking about illegal immigrants and the right of an illegal immigrant to vote. And, you know, it's a law, Mr. Wheeler. You have to be a citizen to vote in the United States.
Yeah, but it's an unconstitutional law, though.
All right, so you're arguing that it is unconstitutional.
Oh, very much so.
First of all, these people came to the country by breaking a law, the immigration laws.
The laws that are being broken, let's talk about the laws that are being broken by these immigrants that are coming to this country and bringing with them a wealth of skills, a wealth of experience, culture, traditions, language, dress, many of the things that our country is so, I think,
really, we need, I think, the stimulation and the inspiration in this, because when you look at this country and how we've sort of all flattened out and dumbed down a little bit due to the Facebook and the Twitter and all of the nonsense that you see, when we have the richness of an immigrant coming here, what is that compared to the law that he broke? The immigration laws are the most suspect and flimsy and irrelevant laws, I think, that any country could possibly have, and doubly so in America.
Well, how can you say that flimsy and suspect and irrelevant in what way?
Well, America is a country that, by its very existence, everyone is entitled, and I know that what I'm saying is going to be, you know, on some level, some people are going to say it's heresy, but I can't see it any other way. Has there ever been a country in the existence of the world that everyone has a right to be a citizen of, like America?
See, I don't understand that.
You don't understand what?
I don't understand how everyone has a right to be a citizen of America. I don't understand how the immigration laws are the flimsiest on record and irrelevant and suspect, as you say. And I don't understand why it is unconstitutional to ask someone for citizenship before they can vote.
Well, the immigration laws, Phil, in our country are irrelevant because America respects the inalienable right of people to vote. And so people, and inalienable means you were born with it, and it's yours. And so that's what the court agreed with me. The court didn't agree with you. The court agreed with me. I don't even know why, in a lot of ways, as we talk about this, I don't need to really defend myself, because the court agrees with me in this case.
877-876-PHIL. Dean Wheeler is with us. A federal appeals court on Tuesday threw out an Arizona state mandate for people to provide proof of citizenship before being allowed to register to vote. In a divided decision, the majority of the three-court panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals concluded the requirement approved by Arizona voters in 2004 runs afoul of the Federal National Voter Registration Act. You know, look, I'm not a Tea Party fan, but I am. I know that there's something definitely wrong with not requiring citizenship, at least requiring citizenship, okay, before you vote.
Well, you know, I'm wasting a lot of my energy because the court agrees with me, and I'm going to say that the court agrees with me. You see, what you read just there shows that the Ninth Circuit Court agrees with me.
Well, but we're on the program right now. We're having a discussion of this, is whether the Ninth Circuit Court is right or not. Okay.
I understand that, but it doesn't make any difference whether what you don't think they're right.
No, I don't.
Well, I do, and they were right. They did do what I wanted them to do.
All right, but okay.
Understand, Mr. Henry, I don't have to prove anything. I don't have to continue proving it. I can just simply say the court agrees with me.
But when you go out into any of these public forums, you're going to be talking to voter groups leading up to the election. You're going to be talking to them about this. You guys had a hand in I guess, campaigning for this.
Yes, but
What are you going to say to those people?
I don't have to say anything. I can say that the court agrees with me.
If you're in front of people who are hostile to this Ninth Circuit's decision, who are saying that there should be proof of citizenship before people vote, you're going to say the court agrees with me.
I'm going to say the court agrees with me, and I know they're going to be hostile because that's how people are when they don't get what they want. And they don't get what they want, and they're going to be angry, and there's nothing they can do about it. I'm the one that won.
No. But when you're talking in front of citizens?
When I'm talking in front of citizens, yes. About, we're going to go out and do a series of panels on this law. And when people say we don't agree, I will say to them, well, that's too bad because the court agrees with us up here on this panel that the, you know, so I'm not even going to go any further than that, Phil. The court agrees with me.
How are you going to convince? Let me ask you something.
You're all worried about okay, now that I'm right, now I have to prove I'm right. No, I'm right. And I don't even know why I spent the time I did talking, you know, to you about it. The court agrees with me. Me.
877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call in Fresno, California. Here is Dan. Dan, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Dean Wheeler.
Yes. How can somebody from another country come and vote here? That's like saying, okay, I can go vote for the British Prime Minister or the Mexico President. Come on now, you know, that just doesn't make any sense.
But in America, if you're living here, we need for illegals to vote because the country needs, obviously, as many intelligent people as they can get to vote. The country is in such a bad... Look what happened when we only let...
So you're telling me an illegal immigrant that can be a drug smuggler can come to my country and vote? That doesn't make any sense.
Technically, yeah. Look, if someone's breaking the law, whether they're a citizen or not...
There's people from that comes from Mexico and goes through the road, goes to INS, goes get their green card. You think it's fair for them?
Well, that's a little ridiculous.
To have somebody
because
who
you don't
get smuggled over here, they get more.
Well, you don't. Yes, because it's a little ridiculous to go through all of that because you can come over illegally and vote.
No, everything has a system. If you don't follow the system, you're illegal.
Yes, so you are illegal,
if that's the case, why do we make laws?
No, you don't understand. You can still vote even though you're illegal. There's nothing illegal about that. Okay? See, I think he understands.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back.
He gets it.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back. Dean Wheeler from the Northern California Holistic Coalition. We're talking about voting and the right of illegal immigrants to vote, which Mr. Wheeler feels very strongly they do have that right and was part of a progressive group that really was campaigning heavily for the Ninth Circuit Court to overturn an Arizona law asking for proof. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, as we talk about the rights of illegal immigrants to vote, and Mr. Wheeler's group feels that constitutionally they have that right. Here is Tony on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, Tony.
How you doing, gentlemen? I'm just calling because I definitely would like to side with Phil on this aspect. I feel as though the allowing illegal immigrants to vote devalues what you get out of an American citizenship. And, you know, if it were one unanimous group made up of people who were citizens and people who were not citizens voting for the same cause, then I would feel a little bit happier about it. But unfortunately, there is a definite line between, you know, what they want and what people need out of their citizenship. So, you know, it makes me wonder if someone who is an illegal in this country is given the right to vote, although they live here and although they are working here, it really does take away from the benefits and the true meaning of being a real citizen in this country.
Well, yeah. How can you argue with that, Dean?
Well, I don't think that either one of you gentlemen would fall into this category, but I think you know, Phil, and Tony knows, that it's very bigoted not to want an illegal immigrant to vote because a lot of people are uncomfortable with the brown skin standing next to them in a polling place. You know, you can talk to your Glenn Beck fans and the T fans, and they don't know anything about the Constitution. All they know is they don't want this, Mexican. I'm glad the courts are taking my side on this. I understand that you gentlemen feel it's special to you to vote, but please, Phil and your caller, Tony, your bigotry and your racism...
Wait, what do you mean bigotry and racism? I haven't heard anything this gentleman say or anything that I've said that is big...
Well, it's unstated. It's an unstated reality for you two white men.
What color are you, Dean?
Excuse me?
What color are you, sir?
I'm white, but I'm not, I'm not a bigot.
Excuse me, Dean. I have a question for you. And this is a legitimate question. I'd like to ask you something. If you believe
the bigotry,
that an illegal immigrant...
Are you a bigot?
Well, let the man talk, please.
I just want to know if he's a bigot.
He's asking you a question.
I'm not a bigot. I'd just like to ask you a question. I'd really like to ask you something. If you believe that illegal immigrants, not because of their race or their color, have the right to vote on issues in this country, let me ask you something. What do you believe the value is or the point of getting an American citizenship? What do you believe the meaning behind being an American citizen is? Because in my opinion, what you're saying is that really doesn't matter. As long as you're living here and working here, you have the right to plan this country's future. But in my opinion,
I think it's dangerous. I think it's dangerous, Tony. It's dangerous to say what you're saying, because when you say, what's the value of being an American citizen, then what happens is you start to invest in the very colonial history. So Mr. Hendry has been very open about the fact that he watches World War II documentaries. What do you say about a man who revels in the violent history of a country dominating the armies of the world?
Wait, hold on for a minute. What are you talking about? Because I'm an American, are you saying that my citizenship has infected me with a love of violence?
I think your citizenship has infected you with a love of American military might.
My citizenship has infected me with a love of my country. And
well, I hardly see that you sitting with your pants off on a couch.
I don't sit with my pants off on a couch.
But I hope, did that answer your question, sir? Is Tony there? Tony?
I'm here, yes.
Did that answer your question?
Well, I mean, it really did not, because, in a matter like this, I really do wonder what you believe the value of an American citizenship is, if you're saying it doesn't
matter. I don't think it's worth a lot. Well, I think nowadays it's not worth a lot, because, look, the Internet, everybody's a citizen of something, and the Internet...
Oh, God, what do you mean the Internet? Look, at Tony, thank you for your call, man. I appreciate it. 877-876-PHIL. What do you mean the Internet?
What happened to the caller?
I let the gentleman go. I'm gonna hold you to... I'm putting your feet to the fire in this. That man has a question. What's the value of an American citizenship?
Well, I was talking to the caller who was respectful.
Well, guess what? I'm now going to be a little aggressive. What's the value of American citizenship? If you don't even have to be a citizen to vote, then what's the value of being an American citizen?
Oh, my God.
Mr. Wheeler, you'll get over it, okay? The caller's gone. It's just you and me.
All right. It's you and me.
Right.
I think the value of American citizenship is something that needs to be reassessed, given the... Given the 8 years of the illegal wars of George Bush, I think the value of an American citizenship needs to be reassessed when the social construct with the white male has been made and it keeps non-whites out. I think the value of an American citizenship needs to be questioned. That this country, when it is doing something wrong by keeping the illegal immigrant from voting, that we're global citizens, and that's the truly valuable thing.
And all right, so there is no value to having an American citizenship.
I think I just said.
The 8 years of illegal wars from George Bush and the social construct by whites to keep the non-whites out. So we're going to have a lot of illegal immigrants voting, at least in the state of Arizona, come, November. Now, when the presidential election rolls around in 2012, you have said, even though you voted for Obama, you're not going to vote for him anymore. What do you hope will happen with all these new illegal voters?
I hope that we finally make a decision that is going to be the right one.
I feel that Barack Obama, in my heart, was the right one, but it wasn't. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, at the time...
No, I don't understand what you're saying.
Well, I'm trying to explain. The vote that I made, when I voted for Barack Obama, I made the right vote. It turns out now that I didn't make the right vote. And I thought I had. I think you can see a lot of people. You know, you really have to ask yourself, Bill, why am I afraid? Forget about me. You're grilling me. You should ask yourself why you're afraid of standing next to a dark man. And
I'm not afraid of that.
Excuse me. Why are you afraid of standing next to a dark man in a polling place? You need to answer that question honestly, and hopefully we'll be able to move past the virulent bigotry, horrifying, virulent, bloodletting bigotry that you and some of your listeners have. And
well, you know what? This is the most asinine statement I've heard of all the comments you're making. Virulent, bloodletting bigotry.
I'm not saying it literally. I'm saying it as a way of how you think, like the way that it used to be of how you think. And I'm asking you, you should be flattered that an illegal immigrant wants to vote. It means this country is doing something right. We're casting aside our bigotry, and you should accept flattery for this. But I don't need to be told by you that my stand for what is right and for what feels good and what looks good and what hopefully fits good and will look good in all seasons and will, not only that, won't clash. I hope that you will help me see that through to a greater day.
It sounded to me like you were describing wardrobe, you know?
What?
It sounded to me like you were describing wardrobe, sir.
Well, I would appreciate if you'd listen to me more carefully.
No, I've been listening very carefully to you, Mr. Wheeler, throughout this entire hour. 877-876-PHIL. Mike in Shreveport, Louisiana. Go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Dean Wheeler.
Hi. Good morning.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
My point is this, you know, and I'm not going to be disrespectful to this gentleman, but the point of the matter is, you want illegals to vote in this country? I mean, why don't we just open the gates and just let everybody come on in and say, oh, hey, howdy do, and all this crap. You know what I mean?
Well, I think when you're dealing with the inalienable rights, and this is a very important term from the Constitution,
what
that means
right?
That these are rights inalienable. That means we're
all
born
that's
with
bull
them.
Hockey.
You've never read the inalienable. You're laughing and you've never read the Constitution, sir? You're laughing and you've never read the Declaration of Independence?
If I go to prison, I can't vote at all. You know? But you want to let some illegal that doesn't pay taxes come in here? We got laws for a reason.
He does pay taxes.
That mean we get rid of everybody smoking? You know, let the kids smoke, let everybody drink? You know, let us beat the kids and all this and stuff and help, you know. What the heck should we do here now? You want to let illegal to come in here and vote out. We decide our rules.
This man is too stupid to talk to.
Hold on for a minute.
I mean, why don't you just have why don't you just have Obama?
You're not even listening about it. Talk
about
man.
Him as a governor. You know,
can I ask you a question?
That is so stupid. You shouldn't even be on the radio talking.
Is this Sam Elliott? Is this Sam Elliott?
Yeah, the caller?
Yes, like Sam Elliott.
Are you Sam Elliott? You are Sam Elliott, aren't you?
I wish I was.
No, it's not. He's a gentleman calling.
Smack you upside the head just to tell you you need to wake up.
Oh, I'd love it. I'd love if you were Sam Elliott to smack me, because then I'd sue you. And man, the money that I'd make from that. You know, you're so funny. You're so funny.
What? You know, both of you guys are laughing at each other. You know,
this guy. Sir, you should stop talking.
Got morons like you sitting around, you know,
sir,
talking whatever you want, and you're getting a voice on the radio.
You,
I
mean, you should stop
we
talking and just
away hunting and fishing.
Oh my God! Well, hunting, of course. I don't think there's anybody that wants hunting. You should stop talking and just lock yourself in your room and wait until the new Glenn Beck book comes out. Because
every day of the week, and I have for the past 45 years. I don't sit around and try to judge everything in the world.
Read the Glenn Beck book.
Well, you know, what you've said here tonight, Mr. Wheeler, that the I heard you say the immigration laws of the United States were flimsy and irrelevant, that we're all citizens of the world. That gentleman who said, what is special about being an American citizen. You said nothing because of 8 years of illegal wars. You are the kind of person that makes people depressed. You don't uplift us.
Oh my God. So this guy calls in with a pack of Marlboros in his voice.
Well, this gentleman is expressing a point of view, but I'd like you to say why it is illegal people have the right.
I already told you. God.
What's this pack of Marlboros in his voice he keeps talking about? I'm sitting here. This is funny. He's being judgmental about people calling him bigots and hypocrites, but he's got these little titles and innuendos to throw out at people. It's like he's smart.
Are you saying you don't smoke cigars or something? I bet you do. Don't you?
This has been my you same boys. I've been asked to be on radio before. This is my same voice I've had all my life since I was past my age of 18.
You didn't have a voice box implanted.
A voice box. All right. Thank you very much, sir. 877-876-PHIL. Another call. Jordan in Peoria, Illinois, listening on WKRS. Go ahead, Jordan.
But the idea that I would be insulted.
All right, yes, sir. Go ahead.
I just had a question here. You say that these people have the right to vote, and, I mean, when they're coming over and you don't have your green card or anything like that, and you don't have your right to work in the country here, are you contributing into the taxes, or are you just another person that's, you know, mooching off everybody else's tax dollars with their, you know, getting the free health care and everything like that, and they're not even contributing to this country?
We have to do something to help them. And the reason why we let them vote is so that they can, if we're giving them health care, they're a part of the system. And so what do they think about that? How do they feel about getting that?
How do they feel about getting free health care?
Excuse me, Mr. Hendry. I was talking to this gentleman.
Go ahead.
So how do they feel about that? And we don't want people to sound like that last guy, Mr. Elliott, who was a great actor, and I loved him, and we were soldiers, but these anti-Semitic wife beaters, you know. So I'm asking...
What anti-Semitic wife beaters?
Would you allow me to keep talking? God. So I'm asking, sir, that people recognize that the immigration laws mean nothing when we need illegals to vote because most people stay home. Okay? Thank you very much.
You're still not answering the question completely. Is that these people, if you don't contribute into something, that's like saying that, you know, if I don't pay into a union, I can still work for it. No, if you work for a union, you need to pay your dues. And if they're not a member of this country and they're not paying taxes, or anything like that.
One of the things that a lot of people don't understand is a lot of these people do pay taxes because they are paying a payroll tax. They're not paying income tax. You're right. They are not filing an income tax form, but they're probably not making enough money whereby they're going to be claiming anything. So that's a point, I guess, that we should point out, Jordan. But essentially what you're saying is true. You know, by observing the laws of the country, that's a big part of being a citizen of a country. And when you don't, why would you have the right to vote?
What law?
The immigration laws.
I already told you those don't mean a flip. Tell me how you... Let me ask the gentleman, sir, how do you feel when a Mexican stands next to you?
Are you speaking to me, sir?
Yes, Jordan. How do you feel when a Mexican sidles up next to you?
No different than if there was an African-American or anybody else standing next to
him. God, why don't I believe you?
All right. I thank you very much, sir.
Why don't I believe
you? Thank you very much, sir. 877-876-PHIL. This has been a very, I think, frustrating hour. Would you calm down?
You know you.
A very frustrating hour with you, Mr. Wheeler, not answering any questions.
Sided with me, and now you've got, what, are you going to kick me off and talk about Charlie Sheen and his coke-fueled rampage?
That's exactly what I'm going to do. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I'll never come on your show again.
Great.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I'm only kidding.
world-famous Bill Hendry
Show. Yes, I do know that. I know you're straight.
All right, well, then why, we're back on the air, forgive me, but you use a term called truth is our bitch. I come on your program, I'm treated like I'm on the yard, and I'm someone's bitch, because the ideas that we have been putting forth on this program have been sound, and they have been about race and bigotry, and I'm passed from one caller to the next, as if I'm going from one.
You're straight, but you sure do love using that jail rape terminology, don't you?
Well, Mr. Henry, you had a woman on last hour that was beyond the pale, talking about being raped by her own son. I couldn't believe it.
877-876-PHIL. We won't talk about my caller last hour. We're talking about what you're saying here this hour, Mr. Wheeler. Here is Mike in Oakland listening on KNEW. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah. If the illegal aliens will be able to vote, how will it help America? To me, I don't think it'll help America. It'll only help the country that they come from. Not just Mexico. There's illegal immigrants coming from everywhere around the country. I mean, around the world.
But I mean, the job the American voters have been doing...
Let me make my point real quick. Now, most people send their money back to their country. And Most of them are going to put people in from their country, that's going to go with their view. It's not going to help America. It's only going to help their country. You know, we are the richest country, and we should live at hand to other countries, but the sanction of being an American is very special to me. Look, I'm a black man, and I hear all this race stuff. I'm an American citizen.
See? Well, you're a black man. You should agree with me. You should agree with me.
No, I don't have to agree with you. You know why? Because I'm an American citizen, and there's...
I voted for Obama.
Look, look, I'm not an Obama fan. Yeah? I'm an American citizen. Look, it's about, about race. You're the guy about race. It's not about race.
What?
It's about being
I agree with you, Mike.
You don't agree with Mike. You're a white man. I'm trying to help him.
You're a condescending idiot is what you are.
Oh, my God. I've never been manhandled.
Phil Hendry.
Not since my time in the day.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Woody Allen had a great line in Crimes and Misdemeanors.
Especially in a community with a lot of elderly citizens.
We're here to present Rand Paul with the Employee of the Month Award.
I've seen people who will have half of it and...
Lesbian, your mom's a lesbian.
Epic fail.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this mother... And through the looking glass we go and beyond, going places where other talk shows cannot go. Singularly unique, groundbreaking, Phil Hendry Show. Should fat people show affection on television? Well, one very popular magazine writer says it is a vile and disturbing thing. She's a writer for some jive ass. I don't know, what is it, bud?
It's a lady magazine.
Yeah. All right, some lady magazine. Nevada voters say Harry Reid was already checkmarked on their ballot. 877-876-PHIL. PhilHendryShow.com for all your Phil Hendry Show needs. Don't forget that our live streaming video of the show and live streaming audio of the show is on right now. And while it is disturbing to look at me on video, although I think I present a colorful eminence, our show's pretty interesting to watch as we perform it, as many people have discovered. So head over to PhilHendryShow.com and watch the most original radio show on the air today. So here we have Nevada voters complaining of problems at the polls. Reid's name already cast on ballots. I don't know what in the hell's going on there. I'm loath to think that there's any corruption, although probably there is less corruption today at the polls than ever before in the history of the country. And that's the irony. It is ironic, in my opinion, because most of the corruption... Most of the fraud, most of the vote stealing, most of the malfunctioning machines, most of the malfeasance and out-and-out felonious behavior with regard to our voting, you know, the voting system in this country probably took place prior to 2000.
Well, what are you talking about, man? I mean, they found out about Bush. You know,
don't give me this they found out about Bush thing. Don't give me that. You know, the vote was really, really close in 2000. So close that they had to start to hand vote, hand count some of these ballots. Now, that's never happened, at least in memory, in this country for a presidential election. The closest election that I experienced in my lifetime, and I was eight, so...
Well, you didn't experience it. You were all probably crying and everything. You had to go to bed.
Okay, that's fine, but I'm not saying that I voted.
Yeah, but you didn't. What do you mean you experienced?
That I was conscious of was Kennedy and Nixon. I wasn't crying to go to bed. What do you mean?
They probably told you to go to bed early that night.
The point being that the Nixon and the... now I forgot.
Who?
Nixon and who?
Kennedy?
Kennedy, yeah. That was a very close election. Now, just so I can say this without you butting in, bud, I'm not saying I voted. I'm saying that in my lifetime, let me put it that way. So the fraud and the vote fixing, good Lord, people. The idea that all of a sudden it happened in 2000, that's the first time. Obviously, people have taken advantage of that event to say, yes, it did start in 2000, and it was Bush who invented it. And there isn't any other way that, you know, people are going to be thinking. Nobody remembers Kennedy and Nixon, and no one remembers that there's a great line from the movie Nixon that was made by Oliver Stone about Richard Nixon. Now, Oliver Stone, I don't think, is a Richard Nixon fan per se, although it was a sympathetic view of Nixon. And in the film, as he's told that he's lost to Kennedy, Nixon's campaign manager walks up to him, and Nixon's considering disputing it. He wants to have a recount. He wants to put the country through that. And they say to him, no, you can't do that. Forget about it, Dick. They say they stole it fair and square.
What's that mean?
Well, I don't know what it means necessarily. I think what he was saying, hey, those guys, they out dirty tricked us, man. They outscrewed us. You know, they out manipulated us. They went and they bought the votes before we could. I think that's basically what he was saying. And with John Kennedy, it was a matter of manipulating a few ballot boxes in the Chicago area. There were a hell of a lot of votes, a lot of Catholics. Who knows? I don't know. But I'll never forget that line. It was a great line. He said, "Forget about it. You know, they stole it fair and square. You are not going to contest anything. You're not going to put the country through this. You're going to wait, and you're going to do it again." And so what we have in this country is a long tradition of some very shady practices when it comes to elections. And it was not invented in 2000. As a matter of fact, from what I know about 2000, after I've listened to all the horse dung that's been thrown about it, after I've listened to all the lies, after I've listened to all the propagandizing and all of the really sad and sick and stupid things that people have said about 2000, it was probably one of the most honest elections that ever took place in the history of this country. Honest. You got to be some kind of brain dead idiot to think some guy stole the election when it goes all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States. Now, you may have stupid people on the Supreme Court of the United States. You can argue that you've got people you don't agree with. You may say those people are the worst in the history of the Supreme Court. But you can't say it was stolen. You cannot. You can say it, but you can't say it with any hope that anybody's going to take you seriously about anything else ever again as long as you live. Now we come to the year 2010. And what do we got in Nevada? Well, now some people are complaining about the machines. Now, here's the thing that I think is interesting. We got in our rearview mirror, we have an event called the 2000 election, which is already very, very uppermost in our minds. We don't want to have to go through that again. So what do we got going on now? We got touchscreen. Now, touchscreen I've used professionally. I've used touchscreen in radio studios. We've had touchscreen in the broadcast business for 20 years at least. Now, the last time I used it, and I hope I never use it again because it's the absolute worst possible system for anybody doing what I do for a living, we used it at WCCO in Minneapolis, a CBS O&O. And, you know, like that mattered. And anyway, so I had to touch the screen if I was going to hit a commercial, touch the screen if I wanted a music bed. Now, that's pretty easy, but suppose I wanted to control the volume. I had to move my finger up and down this screen so that it would be, try to get it to sound like this. But instead, it sounded like this. So it's a very difficult system to use, using it for what I use it for. Now let's take, for instance, going to the bank. Well, now, you know they have a cancel button there, don't you? Why do they have the cancel button? Because touchscreen, even when you're using it with an ATM, is a very difficult thing. I'm not talking about the sun reflecting off the glass. Most banks, or at least most systems, have conquered that. But what they haven't conquered is something you'd think was pretty easy, which is, do you want to withdraw cash? Yes, I do. Hit that button. And you're hitting it 500 times before you find just the right place there on that little touchscreen. Aha! Bang! Then it finally takes. Now, if you hit it in the wrong place, suddenly you're not withdrawing cash. Suddenly you're making a $1 million deposit. And there have been times where it'll say, how much do you want to withdraw? Not here. Enter in the amount. Okay. And say I want 300. It's pretty easy how 300 turns to 3,000 real fast, you know.
Yeah, that happened to me one time. I was trying to get $100,000 or something. And I waited to see if they'd give it to me, but it didn't.
It ain't going to give you $100,000, man.
You're getting out in your account.
Yeah, I know. But if I put $100,000, it wouldn't even spit out some of it.
No, man, they ain't even programmed to do $100,000 out of an ATM machine. The point I'm making, though, is that it's so easy to make a mistake with those things, they have a cancel button. Now we go into the voting booth. We go into the voting booth, and we encounter problems. Now here, before I conclude, here's an interview with Channel 5 News. This is Joyce Ferrara. Channel 5 is in Boulder City, Nevada. Joyce Ferrara says her ballot, along with the ballot for her husband and several others at the poll, was already checked for Harry Reid, the crook.
When I looked at the screen had already was a cast for Harry Reid. One person, okay, that's a fluke. Two people, that's strange. Several within a five-minute time period of time, that's wrong.
Well, I don't know what she's talking about. I do believe her when she said it was, punched for Harry Reid. And I believe that perhaps the same thing happened for her husband. She says several people in a row. Anyway,
one thing, are the old people lying or something?
No, they're not lying, but maybe they're seeing things on account of the way their brains aren't working and their brains are slowing down.
Anyway, Clark County Registrar of Voters Larry Lomax blames this on user error.
Especially in a community with a lot of elderly citizens, senior citizens, who have a little more difficulty working their way through a touchscreen ballot. This election, I think, more than ever, the two sides are very fractured, and each side seems to be suspicious of the other, and we're kind of caught in the middle.
All right, that's fine. But what I would like to know with this touchscreen system is you can, and I believe you can, in Nevada, you can cancel it out and you can vote again. So that's a very, very important thing to know. But understand, just as this guy said, touchscreen, even for young people, even for just regular folks, is a tough thing to use because sometimes when you're seeing it for the first time, the sensitivity is such you can move your finger along the screen of that thing and it, boom, next thing you know, it's voted for someone that you didn't want to vote for. And you're thinking,
epic fail.
But not yours. All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's get off this, man, okay?
Kind of depressing.
Anyway, Mel Gibson is getting ready to say he's sorry, but for what? Oh, I know. For being a scumbag? Okay, plus, should fat people show affection on television? A Marie Claire writer says no, if you've ever read Marie Claire. 877-876-PHIL, even if you haven't read Marie Claire. And if you haven't read Marie Claire, you're not missing anything. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back.
It's The Phil Hendry Show.
For all things news and talk radio, visit trncentral.com. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here, and don't forget on our website, philhenryshow.com, every night we have a... Oh, hold on.
God, man. Where'd you hit the sneeze button?
There ain't no sneeze button. There's only a cough button.
Well, hit bad, man.
I didn't think to. I'm sorry. There is a log.
Where?
A log on my website that we put on the website after every show so you can watch and see what we did on the show. If you want to look at our log and if you want to look at other shows and maybe you're looking for a particular show, check out the logs each day. You can go back down the news feed and find each day's log, and then you will find which day that broadcast was, and you can find that in our archives. 877-876-PHIL. Marie Claire is a blog. It's a website for women, fashion, hair, beauty, health, fitness, lifestyle, celebrity, career, money. I don't know whether it is a magazine, per se, or it is, when I say a magazine, a hardcover magazine that you can find on a newsstand, but it's certainly an internet magazine, so to speak. And Maura Kelly is a writer. Now, she writes an article, a blog, I should say, called My Year of Living Flirtatiously. She's tracking her dating life. Well, she wrote one, Should Fatties Get a Room Even on TV? And this is from today, I believe, right? October the 25th? No, this is from 2 days ago. She said, the other day my editor asked me, do you really think people feel uncomfortable when they see overweight couples making out on television? Because I can be kind of clueless. I'm not much of a TV person. I had no idea what she was talking about. So she steered me to this CNN article about the CBS sitcom Mike and Molly. As CNN explains, the show centers around a couple who meet in an Overeaters Anonymous group and has drawn complaints for its abundance of fat jokes, as well as cries from some viewers who aren't comfortable watching intimacy between two plus-size actors. So she wrote a blog, and she basically agrees. She thinks that she's grossed out looking at fat slobs kissing. Now, I don't know why, but when I look at her, she's a very attractive girl. And when I look at other slender people, I think, you know, that's great. That's healthy. And that's exactly what, you know, I'm working toward. I work out every day. But I don't know. I just like to make those people uncomfortable. I as soon as I hear that they've got a problem with something, I'm in favor of the thing they've got a problem with.
You kidding me, man? So you want to see a fat man? You want to see a fat man have sex?
No, I notice how you go to the fat man having sex.
Yeah, what's that about?
Well, he's the one talking about it.
No, I don't want to see a fat man having sex. But I'll tell you one other thing. Anytime television gives me a glimpse at the real world, I'm grateful. Now, a lot of people don't like that. They watch TV for one reason and one reason only, and that is escape. And the people who are involved in the producing of TV shows take that seriously. Yes, the people sit down, they want an escape. So they give people the mindless escape that they want. They provide them with stupid shows. I'm loath to judge a man's taste, but when you show me a show like, oh, I don't know, let's take one off the top of my head, Survivor, which, you know, Jersey Shore, I don't care, man. I mean, television has provided us with a long list of things that suck, basically. Television's also given us some damn good TV. But generally, that's on the pay channels like HBO and Showtime. Nothing on network television comes close to what I would call quality television, and I don't care what show you're talking about. Nothing. Nothing.
What about Glee? You don't get it about Glee.
I get it about Glee, man. I get it about Glee. There ain't a show on TV that I don't get it about. There's nothing to get, man. Do you understand? There's nothing to get. So whatever. It's pop culture at its best. It's taking the reality of life and putting it through a sausage maker. It's taking the extreme realities of life and shoving it into a sausage maker and making it all come out just homogenized on the other end. It's making lesbianism. It's making, gay people. It's making black, racial humor. It's taking all of that and making it acceptable. Ooh, sometimes a little bit on the extreme side. Sometimes kind of, ooh, just a little bit scary. But never, never anything that's really going all the way subversive. There's a lot of fake subversive stuff on television.
Like what?
Like all of this bull crap about the Glee photo shoots. You know, that stuff is just tasteless. There ain't nothing subversive about it. There's nothing that's counterculturally revolutionary about it. It's just tasteless crap. You know, and I say that, excuse me, I hate to be old-fashioned, but I don't know, teenage girls, they're still underage, and sexualizing them seems a little weird. You know, call me crazy. Nonetheless, there's nothing on television that has anything revolutionary, anything new, anything exciting to say, not on the over-the-air commercial channels like CBS, NBC, or ABC, or Fox. Fox is probably the closest to something that one would say has pushed the edge of the envelope a bit. But when they put a show like Family Guy on, which not only is not The Simpsons, but is a step backward, and they seem to think they've really hit the ball out of the park with a hip show. Sorry. Sorry. No, you ain't, man. No, you ain't.
Family Guy's bitching.
That's great, bud. That's good for you.
Yeah, man. You love Family Guy.
It's great, and you don't even know.
That's right. I don't know what's funny at all. You're right. So now we have Mike and Molly, a couple of fat people who kiss, make love, do whatever they want. Well, right away, I got to love that. Why wouldn't I want to love that? And what makes it even better is that there's people calling in and complaining about it. Who are these people that are complaining about fat people kissing on television? No life people? I mean, you ain't even paying for that garbage. You ain't even paying for it, man. You sit and you watch the commercials and you get, you know, and you're watching Mike and Molly and they're fat and their asses wiggle. I love it, personally. Why? Because it's making, what's-her-face, Mara Kelly uncomfortable. Her argument was that the show promoted obesity acceptable when it is costing our country far more in terms of all the related health problems we're paying for. Oh, is that right? I thought it was cigarette smoking. Now you're telling me it's obesity. You know, we better get our act together here and get, if that's the worst problem we got, I say we start smoking again on television. So here they are trying to be diverse. Did you guys ever, CBS, is that the network this thing's on? Did you ever think in your wildest dreams you'd put a couple of fat pigs on the air and they'd be making out and people would complain about your ever so earnest efforts at diversity? I applaud you, right? I applaud you. But I also know that you guys are so gutless, you'll take it off the air the minute enough dumbasses from Flyover America call in and say it's making them uncomfortable. And Maura Kelly. So I know it's going off the air, so I can't give CBS all that much credit.
Wait a minute, you like the show, but you're saying they're dumbass?
I'm saying the network, CBS, is dumbass, because while they might have made a courageous decision putting this on the air, money's on it that they will homogenize it enough so that it is acceptable. They're not in the business of doing anything other than pandering. Now, the American people don't know what it is they want to watch. They only know what they like when they see it. So you are in the constant, you're on the constant treadmill of creating something and hoping people like it. Now you create something that you figure, maybe people like this because it looks like people, real people, fat people. And guess what they find out? Fat folks and regular folks don't want to look at regular folks on TV. They want to look at regular folks, but they want to look at regular folks doing, you know, irregular things. Like two fat people not making love.
But, well,
believe me, they do, bud. 877-876-PHIL, because I'm fat. Right back here on a world-famous Phil Hendry show.
Phil Hendry.
Will Mel Gibson apologize for being a douchebag?
World famous Phil Hendry
on the
show.
Line.
Yeah, and just a minute.
All right, Margaret Gray is going to join us in a few minutes. She wanted to come on earlier in the program. I know that you, Margaret, are you there?
Yeah, Frank and I are. We wanted to do this earlier, Phil, and we had some problems, as you know.
No, I know that, but we're going to get you on so we can have you do the. You're going to demonstrate for us what you're going to make available as a download: some show tunes. Right.
Yes, we're not going to sync all of them, but I want to give people an idea of what we're going to be offering for the download, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's the download.
For download. These will be some of the songs that I can remember singing on stage as actors such as Richard Burton were off stage encouraging me. Richard Harris offstage encouraging me, Robert Goulet, and so forth. So I think people will enjoy it.
down.
All right, well, all of those actors were in Camelot.
A lot of them were in. You're calling it Camelot. I don't know. Cameltoe. Frank says it's Cameltoe.
How old are you?
How dare you ask me that?
All right. So forget about how old you are. You got this guy telling you that one of the biggest, longest-running, and most successful musicals in Broadway history was called Cameltoe.
Yeah. I don't know.
Look, you're saying it's not Cameltoe. He thinks, like you do, that it's Camelot.
Who's he?
Margaret.
Oh, I forgot you confused genders.
What?
Never mind. No, it's Camelot, not Cameltoe.
I don't know.
All right. Well, the first... Excuse me, I'm very emotional tonight because of what you put me through.
Margaret, I didn't mean to put you through anything. You were the one that was saying that your son... you were the one saying that you had to carry pepper spray because you were afraid your own son might rape you.
And I still hold to that belief. Now, I'm not going to go through this again.
All right, fine.
Now, the song that I want to do, this is an example. And this is from Camelot. I have often walked down the street. Would you tell those asses that...
Shut up!
We've got a lot of people leaving the screening, Phil. I don't know if you can hear me.
I can hear you fine.
I have often walked down the street.
You don't shut up, son. I'll lock a door and set fire to something.
It's got that. There's the one right there.
Hey, you!
Get her.
You! Shut that door!
I have often walked. There she goes now.
Will you come on, Margaret?
Well, there's one girl making.
Yeah, I got her.
Yeah. Screw with my singing, huh?
What did you do?
Never mind. Don't worry what I did.
All right.
I forgot the song.
I have often walked. What is it, on the street where you live?
From Camelot.
It's not from Camelot. It's from My Fair Lady.
Your lies, Phil, are... They're enjoyable and they're entertaining, but you know what? They don't move me at all. I'm not getting down on my knees for those.
It's not a lie. On the street where you live is from...
Cameltoe.
From Cameltoe. It's from My Fair Lady.
Yeah, I'll bet she is. I have often walked...
You know what? I'm not even going to mess with it.
You hung up on her.
But why do you always tell me I hung up on some? I know I hung up on her. I saw that I hung up on her. You know, every time I hang up on David Hall, you go, you hung up on him.
Yeah, well, I mean, that could you get a complaint.
From who am I going to get a complaint?
From Ms. Gray.
I don't care. Ask me if I care that I get a complaint from her. Every time I hang up on somebody, I don't need you telling me you hung up on them.
Well, I just want you to know, because the line go dead.
Yeah, I know the line, go dead. Oh, man.
What are you laughing at?
You talk like a freaking idiot. You know that? Anyway, Mel Gibson gearing up to say I'm sorry. Hangover director speaks about axing Mel. After the shocking news that the cast and crew of Hangover 2 wanted nothing to do with Mel Gibson because he hates Jews and 90% of them are Jewish, the actor himself... I'm kidding, he didn't say that, but it's basically true. The actor himself is starting to realize that remaining silent... Why do I have lockjaw tonight? The actor is starting to realize that...
Yeah, and you're blind, too.
And yeah, I am blind. The actor is starting to realize that remaining silent is doing him no favors in the eyes of the public. And, of course, the Hollywood producers that hold his career in their hands. How can a guy who has produced and directed two Academy Award-winning films that were monumental moneymakers, like The Passions of Christ and Braveheart, how can this guy's ass be in the hands of Hollywood producers? Anyway... That's why the fallen star is getting ready to tell his side of the story, sources tell PopEater.com. Since the second the tapes were released, every media outlet, including this site, has been contacting Mel's people asking for an interview, an insider says. Now, after months of silence, Mel has finally realized if he doesn't say something really soon, it might be too late. The days of burying his head in the sand, hoping this whole ugly mess goes away, are over. Now, Mel has his pick of any outlet, and everyone from Oprah to Letterman and the Today Show to The View have all made it clear that they would love to give him a venue to spill it. However, sources close to the actor say Mel wouldn't go on The View because he's got to sit next to a black woman. He's not sure whether Letterman's a Jew, and, you know, there's a bunch of other stuff. No, it doesn't say that.
Are you sure, man?
No, it doesn't say that. However, sources close to the actor say Mel would rather sit down with a man this time around, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, he wants to sit down with a man because every time he get interviewed by a woman, they lie. Oh, they lie.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Well, no, I don't think it's because they lie. I think it's because he's going to come off looking like a bully or something, man. So if he sits down with a guy, you know. But see, Mel Gibson has this really intense demeanor. And when he sits down with a cat like Matt Lauer, or if he sits down with any of these guys, Letterman would be good. Letterman, I think you should do Letterman, Mel, because Letterman is like you, man. He's just this... He's a dude with a chip on his shoulder, too.
That's a pretty good idea.
Yeah. He should go on Letterman. Letterman's got a chip on his shoulder. He's ready to kick someone's ass. He can't stand life, and I don't blame him. And he needs to go on a show like that with a cat like Letterman's going to understand, man. Not go on with one of these candy asses like Matt Lauer. Excuse me, Mr. Lauer, but, you know, it's true. Or go on The View. That's death, man. He's going to have Joy Behar sitting there who say, you know, they'll just be cheering her ass and, hey, Joy, way to do it. And what's going to happen is Gibson will wind up strangling her to death. It'll be like the Nurse Ratched scene in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest as Jack Nicholson was just pounding Nurse Ratched's head on the floor.
Yeah, and you'll hear Barbara Walters going, no, Mel, no, stop, stop.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, you know, no, Mel, stop, don't do it. Remember like in Cuckoo's Nest, what's his face? Harding kept saying, no, Mac, stop, Mac. And he's just choking her. That's what would happen.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about that's what would happen. If Gibson goes on The View, that's what happens to Whoopi Goldberg or Joy Behar. Gibson turns into Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and he's choking the hell out of her. All right. Here is, on a podcast called Comedy Death Ray Radio on October the 15th, actor Zach Galifianakis hinted at what we now know was Mel Gibson's appearance in Hangover 12.
But a movie that you're acting in, you don't have a lot of control. I mean, you just show up and vomit your lines out. Yeah. I mean, I'm not the boss. I'm in a deep protest right now with a movie I'm working on.
Really?
Up in arms about something, but I can't get the guys that... I'm not making any leeway.
Really? Is that the, I know you're filming the...
It has something to do with a movie I'm working on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell you about it later.
Okay. I'd love
it's
to hear
very
about
frustrating.
It.
Here is Tony Potts, co-host of Access Hollywood, talking to Headline News' Showbiz Tonight about the argument that it's unfair to boot Gibson from The Hangover 2 when convicted rapist Mike Tyson starred in the first one.
Woody Allen had a great line in Crimes and Misdemeanors.
Okay, thanks. No, here it is.
Woody Allen had a great line in Crimes and Misdemeanors. It's comedy is tragedy plus time. And I think that, you know, that Mike Tyson...
Actually, that wasn't Woody Allen, that was...
Alan Alda.
Woody Allen had a great line in Crimes and Misdemeanors. It's comedy is tragedy plus time. And I think that, you know...
Dumbass.
That Mike Tyson had time, 17 years. Does it make it right? No, absolutely not. And also, think about this. Why would you want to put one roadblock in the way of people possibly seeing your movie next year? Giving them a reason not to come see it. There's a big divided opinion about Mel Gibson in the public, in the movie public. So if I'm Warner Brothers or if I'm the cast or whomever, why would I want to put that one more thing out there to say, you know what, I'm not going to go because Mel's in it. So the comparisons to Tyson, I think, are a little dated.
You are so wrong, you dumb clown. First of all, the public doesn't care. The public will go see Mel Gibson. The public doesn't care. If Mel Gibson was in The Hangover 2, it would not affect the box office at all. It'd bother the actors. It might bother the studio. It might bother people that you got to party with, but it ain't going to bother nobody out here in public land. Okay? And what do you mean the Mike Tyson comparison is a bit dated? What's that supposed to mean? I mean, the cat went to prison, okay? He did time for a rape. I think Gibson is a warped and damaged guy, but I don't think it makes him much different from 50% of all American men. 50, I said. 50. I think if you don't recognize that in Hollywood, you guys are making a big mistake. And I know what you're saying. You're saying, well, even if American men are as warped as you say they are, Mr. Henry, perhaps we can show them the way. Well, if you're thinking that way, you guys need you need a whole new way of looking at things. But Mel Gibson's attitudes, especially fueled by tequila, I believe probably that guy holds them pretty close because his old man's a freak. And God knows what Gibson's problem is. But the average American man, if you ratcheted Mel Gibson down a few notches, you pretty much got the average American man. White and black. White and black. And Jewish. So, you know, I think the guy needs, there's no question this cat's got to, you know, clean his act up. No question at all. There's no question he's got to remember he's a public personality and he's got to behave as such. There's no question that whatever his beliefs, he has to temper them because he works in a commercial marketplace. He works in the world of selling a product to the public. He's got to remember that, man. Nobody goes to see your movies, Mel, to kiss your ass because we think you're so phenomenal. We go to see your movies because you make good movies. People go see you in The Hangover because we want to see what you look like as a tattoo artist in Bangkok. I think you'd probably be pretty cool. Liam Neeson. Anyway, but nobody goes to see your flick because you're some kind of god. We don't give a damn, man. People got way too much to do. You make a good movie and we go see them. And you've made some great movies. And the other thing I don't think you have to worry about is whether producers hold their career and your career in their hand. Who cares? So you're only going to be able to bank $3 million a year instead of $7 million. I don't know how much you're having to pay your ex-wife, how much they're going to make you pay this chick. You know what, man? Let that be a lesson to you, you dumbass. Moving in with women, you know, they're having your baby. What the hell do you think is going on anyway? Errol Flynn, the days when the studios got rid of these problems for you, the studio ain't going to get rid of nothing for you, man. They want to see you drown. Wake the hell up, Jack. And remember, you know, you may think that your stuff doesn't smell. Driving 100 miles an hour down PCH with a tequila bottle between your legs, you need a freaking psychiatrist. Other than that, you're my kind of guy. All right, is it unconstitutional to prevent teachers from adding their students as friends on Facebook? ACLU says it just might be. ACLU says that these strange adults should be able to contact your children without your permission and without your knowledge. That's what the ACLU says, because the ACLU wants to be even more hated. They want to be even more disliked. They want to be even more misunderstood than they are today, and they will continue not to explain themselves at all. And if they try to, it sounds really high-minded and really stupid. 877-876-PHIL.
Right on, Mr. Henry.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Wow.
Phil Hendry.
Is that Robert?
I don't know. What if you get kids around and they had a vegetable? You know, that would be a beautiful world.
That's ridiculous. No kid going to go get a vegetable.
Are you talking about that Hidden Valley Ranch thing?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea, man. I think to get a kid want to have a vegetable.
I wouldn't want to do it.
Well, okay. I think what most people understand, Bud, that most kids like ice cream. They don't like vegetables. I think what Robert is saying is, wouldn't it be a nice world if kids ran to a vegetable wagon, you know?
No. What would that be about?
Because a kid want to have a vegetable.
So what if you want to have a vegetable? That'd be a retarded kid.
Oh, will you stop with the retarded, okay? What do you mean a retarded kid?
Yeah. If a kid want to have a vegetable instead of ice cream, that good?
Not necessarily.
What are you guys talking vegetable? It's called vegetable. All right, Michael Jackson is the top-earning dead celebrity. We've got a list here very quickly. I'd like to tell you who the top-earning dead celebrities are. Isn't this great? This is, you know, you can't... I'm telling you, there's so much space and there's so much time and there's so many readers and there's so much to fill up on the internet, you're going to have to fill it with something. And now we have a list of the top 10 dead celebrities. Number 10, Richard Rodgers. Richard Rodgers was, I believe, a songwriter or a lyricist. He and Oscar Hammerstein, they wrote such greats as "The Lady is a Tramp," "My Funny Valentine." Richard Rodgers makes $7 million a year. Am I right about that? What is this list representing? All right, anyway, George Steinbrenner, $8 million a year, is at number 9. At number 8 is Albert Einstein, $10 million a year. Dr. Seuss's Theodore Geisel, $11 million a year, number 7. Stieg Larsson, who is a novelist who wrote The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and other crap, $15 million a year. John Lennon, $17 million a year. He's number 5. At number 4 is Charles Schulz, $33 million a year. Man, he's still milking that Lucy and Peanuts thing, huh?
Yeah, there's no accounting for taste.
Anyway, number 3, J.R.R. Tolkien, $50 million a year. Number 2 is Elvis Presley, $60 million a year. And finally, Michael Jackson at $275 million. He is the number 1 dead-earning celebrity. Another asinine list. These are the TV ratings. I'm kidding. Who won Monday night? ABC's Dancing with the Stars. That was Monday, hour by hour. And what about last night? Have we got last night? Oh, wait a minute. This is last night, Monday night. Anyway, 8 p.m. was won by ABC's Dancing with the Stars. 9 o'clock, ABC wins again, Dancing with the Stars. 10 o'clock, ABC wins again with Castle. So they kicked ass. All right. In Norton, Massachusetts, teachers are being warned not to friend students. The ACLU argues this may infringe on teachers' freedom of speech. The perverts that teach the kids in Norton, Massachusetts, want to friend kids without the knowledge of the parents. Yes, these sick animals. Anyway, in the hazy realm of cyberspace, one school district is drawing a sharp line. Virtual friendships between teachers and their students are a bad idea. I think that that is a very wise choice. I certainly don't think they should be contacting kids without the knowledge of the parents. Worried about the potential risks of online interactions, the school board in Norton last week urged teachers not to become friends with their students on Facebook and other social media sites and advised them to avoid friendships with former students as well. Tom Galata, who's a school board member, said the ban is designed to maintain a divide between teachers' professional and private lives and send a message that becoming too friendly with students is not acceptable. Now, this is a school district, so we're talking about underage students. Under the policy proposed by Patricia Ann Say, public school superintendent, teachers are urged to contact students only through the school's electronic system and not give out their cell or home phone numbers. Norton's restrictions mirrored statewide recommendations. The policy urges superintendents to periodically conduct internet searches to see if teachers have posted inappropriate materials online. I like that idea. However, Chris Ott, communication director for the American Civil Liberties Union of Massachusetts, said the policy potentially infringes upon the teachers' freedom of speech. Teachers and students have private conversations all the time, he said. It's not clear why electronic conversations are different. Oh, gee, Chris, well, because they have private conversations on campus. On campus, not private conversations through the cyberspace. Not sitting around on the phone, jawjacking, with their feet up on the desk, having themselves a Triscuit or a Wheat Thin. The recommendation that teachers not be Facebook friends with former students seems excessive, he said. Paul Toner, president of the Massachusetts Pain in the Ass Association, said the policy seemed blunt but well-intentioned. Generally, we don't like flat dictums, he said, if you'll pardon my language. But I think it's good advice for teachers to maintain, by the way, I do have a flat dictum, he said, but I think it's good advice for teachers to maintain professional boundaries. Teachers are role models, Toner said. And he said, by the way, if you need any toner, I'm your guy. Ha, 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 he said. And then he said, they need to act the way that, you know, you got to like earn respect, he said, and then passed out. I used to tell my students, I'm not your friend, he said, I'm your teacher or your lover.
He didn't say that.
No, he didn't say that. You know, look at Teach. Just get it together, okay? Your students are your students. You're not going to have any cyberspace relationship. Tell the ACLU that, as well-meaning as they are, and I'm sure they are, to shove it deep and wide. Charles Wygant is our technical director. Of course, our associate producer, screener, Dan Northcraft. And our producer is Jason Rance. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com for all of your Phil Henry needs. Later and greater.
Phil Henry.